back on the Young Turks second hour. Grace Baldridge with us, Brett Ehrlich with us, Pop Trigger, everybody check it out. Murder with Friends, check it out. Okay, calm down. Let's just keep going, okay? Grace, you look like you're about to be out of control, okay?
Out of control.
We're going to lose Grace.
$15.
It's true. It's true.
Grace, yeah, see, Brett's backing me up. We're outvoting you. Okay. Somebody give me a taser. She's out of control.
Okay.
Can't, where can I get Flint cops around here? Anyway, $15 from Margie in from Wisconsin. I think that's pronounced Margie. $27 from Cynthia in Georgia, and $27 from Richard in California. You guys are awesome. Let me see, tytnetwork.com/go. I need the cameras and the chairs gone at $5,000. You got to endow the chairs. It's panic time. There's less than a week to go. Okay, these cameras are going to be. Savannah Cooper has already got one. Steven Garcia's got two. Adam Westbrook's got this desk. You got to go, guys. You got to go. It stays in your name for years and years and years. We got to get to 2 million to hire two more reporters. There's two that we really like, we want to be able to hire. There's a lot we like. All right, anyways. Brian Hayes says, one day Ivanka will release the tell-all book, and Trump's response will be, never heard of that person. No idea. Don't know him.
I don't know her.
Okay. Rhesus Perplexus says, Donald Trump is like a smart imbecile. I will tell you this.
You know, I'm like a smart person.
And Stephen McCallum says, Democrats actually believe Bernie Sanders wouldn't have been able to beat this guy. Come on. I hear you on that. The flip side is Hillary Clinton actually lost to that guy. And the new poll from earlier today shows that if we had the election again today, she would lose even worse.
I'm holding on to hope that it might be a dream.
Yeah, you know, that's so funny because the other day I had a dream within a dream, seriously, of Patrick Duffy.
Of Patrick Duffy from Step by Step?
From Dallas.
From Dallas. Sorry, yes, I know, from Dallas.
The famous dream season.
I didn't catch Dallas. I did just watch CNN's The 80s about
Dallas. I actually know what Cenk is talking about because I saw it in like some countdown of like worst TV like endings. Is it an ending?
Yes.
So Dallas was a dream?
At least a whole season was, yes.
Good to know.
So, in fact, there's a number of things that we will do in the postgame for you guys. We will talk, there was another story I didn't get to about how obsessed Donald Trump is with TV. You guys will love that. We'll talk about that. I'll tell you about that Patrick Duffy dream.
Good.
And I think you'll love my interpretation of it. That's my guess.
I love hearing dream interpretations.
Yes.
That's going to be a fun postgame.
There's some chance Patrick Duffy's pregnant. Kidding. And finally, on the post game, am I black or am I white?
You personally?
Yes. We have a conclusion. Okay.
All right.
I don't even know where to start evaluating that.
Okay. So all that in the post game, tytnetwork.com/join to hear conclusive evidence on that.
All right.
Okay. Grace, what do you got for us?
Okay. So American Airlines has caught itself in a little bit of a publicity scandal of its own. It has suspended a crew member after a Facebook video went viral. The Facebook footage was titled, OMG, AA flight attendant violently took a stroller from a lady with her baby on my flight, hitting her and just missing the baby. Then he tried to fight a passenger who stood up for her, AA 591 from San Francisco to Dallas-Fort Worth. That is what the caption read. Now, that wasn't caught on video, but the aftermath was caught on video. Let's take a look at a clip of what got everyone so upset.
Joy, this is a.
You do that to me, and I'll knock you flat.
You stay out of this.
Come on, Joy.
Come on.
So that was the flight attendant who allegedly did hit the woman in the face with a stroller responding to a passenger who witnessed the altercation, or some are saying didn't witness the altercation, standing up for the passenger who you can also hear crying in the background. Now, American Airlines has issued a statement, an apology. They have said, quote, we have seen the video and have already started an investigation to obtain the facts. We are deeply sorry for the pain we have caused this passenger and her family and to any customers affected by the incident. The actions of our team member captured captured here do not appear to reflect patience or empathy, two values necessary for customer care. And as I said previously, that crew member in question has been suspended from the flight crew. A lot of people are actually celebrating how American Airlines has handled this situation in light of the United Airlines incident about 2 weeks ago. Do you think that that is warranted? Did they handle this better? Is it cause for celebration that American Airlines handled this the way that they did, issuing an apology so swiftly?
I think they handled it better. Whether that's a cause for celebration is a different...
I know.
Like, is it better than a train wreck? Yes, it was just a 17-car pileup. You know?
Okay, so first of all, let's just start with me saying, told you about American Airlines.
What happened there? Can we go into it?
Yeah. So now you remember, or maybe you don't, that I got thrown off an American Airlines flight, and it was for the grave crime of recording an incident like this, right? So I'm surprised actually the guy recording was not thrown off. Later, American Airlines did tell me, yes, you're not allowed to record any of our flight attendants because that's a security risk. No, it's because they're worried about videos just like this, embarrassing them. And that's why you're not allowed to record it.
And to that degree, the man that we see that really instigated the confrontation with the flight attendant, he says once he is escorted back to his seat, he says, I hope someone's filming this. I hope you get caught and this goes viral, something along those lines. So people now know that filming what is going on when there is some sort of an upset on a flight is really good to establish what the story is. Now, again, we don't exactly have any video. We don't have video of the initial stroller incident. And I know that, Brett, we talked about this on Pop Trigger. You have some views about what you think went down and how it was handled prior to the come fight me, come hit me, bro incident.
There's an account of someone who's in the back of the plane who says that, like, this mother went, like, from 0 to 100 real quick. And the flight attendant, like, mirrored that but didn't start doing that. That said, like, when people are on planes, the flight attendant should not have overreacted that much. And it seems like the flight attendant was at a breaking point and it should not have acted that way whatsoever. They have to take into consideration that folks on planes, like, where else do you work where like 10% to 25% of the people are afraid they're about to die? Like, folks stop being utterly rational. I will say that, like, this woman had too many personal items on the plane, and you're only allowed 3. And typically, it's the first class flight attendant who's sitting there welcoming folks on who says, all right, you have too many personal items. I'm glad you can bring your kid down in a stroller. You have to take gate check, mm-hmm. it's called, that stroller, and put it away.
Yeah.
But she got down. And there are also accounts that she's Argentinian. English might not be her first language, so she didn't fully understand it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it seems like that flight attendant definitely overreacted. And especially in the face of, like, White Knight there that decided he was going to step in on behalf of something that it seems he really didn't know the backstory of.
So, look, the more important issue is a better balance for how we handle these situations. Because, look, everybody gets cranky going on flights. So can the passengers from time to time be in the wrong? Of course! Can the flight attendants be wrong from time to time? We're all cramped in this tiny little space. There's usually the stress of, am I gonna miss the flight? Am I not? Am I gonna get everything on the flight? There's all this different stress points. As to Brett's point, some people are worried, well, oh my God, it's dangerous up there, yada, yada, right? So, but there was an imbalance of power for a long time where the flight attendants and everyone who worked at the airport, even the Dunkin' Donuts guy, felt like, hey, 9/11, I'm in charge. You listen to everything I say, otherwise I'm gonna have you removed from the building and ruin all your plans. And that lasted all the way through when they kicked me off, all the way through almost to the United incident mm-hmm. that just happened. And I think now there is like a rebellion, a customer rebellion going, nah, I can't take it anymore. I'm gonna say something about it. And so when I got kicked off, and that wasn't that long ago, what is it, about a year ago or so, right?
Maybe even less.
So a lot of people were on my side because, boy, you felt these frustrations, right? And some people were like, no, you gotta follow the rules. I'm like, I didn't even know that was a rule. Nobody knows it's a rule that you can't record flight attendants in a situation like this, right? Mm-hmm. And they'd made a mess of it, and part of it because other guys and myself, we had raise our voice and saying, get us a plane. And they did get us a plane. We were right, right? That's what made them even more embarrassed. But even at that time, people were like, well, no, it's, I mean, flight. It's a flight. It's a magical thing where these guys are always right no matter what happens, and how dare you, and they could ruin your plans and all this stuff at a moment's notice. Now people are going, "Nah, I don't think so. I don't think so."
Right. Well, you can file things into like the foreseeable thing that could go wrong, the cover your ass thing that shouldn't happen in any given situation, where like they make up a fictional plane problem just because like there's not enough crew there. Like that kind of stuff happens all the time, and it would be nice to have full communication between the people who are on the plane and the people who are working the flight. I mean, and the tower. Like there's a lot of places where the communication could break down. Yeah, I don't know. I think that if I were to put myself in the place of flight attendants and captains and people who work at the airport in the aftermath of 9/11, like holy shit. That would be so terrible. I mean, it's scary enough if you're on the plane all the time that like there is just a higher percentage that you're going to die on the job. Add to that 9/11, I get it. I don't think it should last that long. I definitely think since there are three airlines that work the skies really, and then a bunch of others that try to, you know, consolidate to compete with those, that those three airlines have a lot of extra power that they shouldn't have. I think that it's tough. Some of the schedules that the flight attendants are asked to work were like that guy probably was working, you know, an overnight flight or something and then had day rest. I don't know. But like you just have to take into consideration that everyone hates flying, even the folks who are working the flights. Mm-hmm. I just think that there's been an uptick in people who are also trying to win, you know, who wants to be a millionaire from the airline industry right now. From accounts that I've heard from people in planes, that it's just not a good situation. And there is a good fight to be fought here. I would just make sure that when you read a heading that says, "Oh my God, American Airlines flight attendant violently took a stroller from a lady with her baby on my flight and then hitting her and just missing the baby," you don't automatically start tweeting, don't jump to your delete Uber hashtag without getting all the facts. And yes, frequently the facts are on your side, but just make sure first.
Yeah.
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 If you do hashtag delete American Airlines at an airport, you'll be in even bigger trouble.
Okay. I just love that the flight attendant was like, "Come at me, bro." It's like, all right.
This is not Fight Club. This is Flight Club.
Oh.
Woo.
Okay.
I did that for Pop Trigger. It's not creative. All right.
You know, I can't help but say one last thing, even though I shouldn't. I'm taking too much time. Okay. There's something called calculated misery on flights. The airlines know this, and they figure, how miserable can we make you so that you will pay us extra to get on the flight first, to have more, to pay for more overhead storage, etc. So they shrink everything and they make us more miserable on purpose so we'll pay for extras. So in a situation like that, everybody's nerves are frayed. And so when you, it's unsurprising that this kind of stuff would break out all the time.
Yeah.
And you put, by the way, not only are you like, literally calculating misery for your customers, what a shitty, shitty industry, right? But you're also putting your attendants in a really terrible situation because then they got to respond to those guys who are super cranky, and you knew you created the environment to make them cranky.
Right. There was that report that there was the embarrassment factor of being the last one to board, and they equated it to a walk of shame. So they have not just like first class and then like business first and then, you know, the economy plus, at the end they add like this really, really last people to board the plane so that there's no overhead bin space, and they say that people will pay not to be ashamed to be the last ones to board.
Yeah, there's more where that came from, but it'll take me an hour to go through all my complaints.
Oh,
okay, what's next?
Fox News has been making headlines for allegations of sexual assault coming from the top. Adding her voice is CNN's Allison Camerota, who used to be a Fox News correspondent. She sat down to share her experience with Roger Ailes. Let's take a look.
But the time that I remember most was when I was first starting out at Fox and I was single. And I remember Roger being in Roger's office, and I was saying that I wanted more opportunity. And he said, "Well, I would have to work with you." I would have to work with you on that case. I would have to work with you really closely. And it may require us getting to know each other better. And that might have to happen away from here. And it might have to happen at a hotel. Do you know what I'm saying? And I said, yeah, I think I do know what you're saying.
So she goes on to say, quote, I remember vividly I had sort of an out-of-body experience and thinking, is this it? Is this the end of my time here? Will I be fired if I don't do this? Obviously, a lot of people are asking questions. Why is she choosing to speak up now? Some people are, you know, questioning her story. I think that when you watch the full interview that she did on CNN, it becomes very clear that this is a lived experience, a lived and true experience. And I think that she's just corroborating something that we know now to be true, is that from the top down, there is a culture of sexual harassment, misconduct at Fox News. And of course, that began with Roger Ailes. And I think that she speaks about it really eloquently. And it talks about sort of an odd lived and functional experience of when sexual harassment is just part of your workplace. And she continued working there, and she continued being a professional, but she did wonder about the opportunities that could have come her way had she maybe followed up on this offer from Roger Ailes. It's really disgusting, but I think that it is worth looking into and hearing about this, because we shouldn't be so quick to doubt the stories of people who come out later.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't mean every story is true. Just today, I did a story about Debbie Schlussel accusing Sean Hannity of Fox News, which I was very skeptical about her story. And so you got to look at the full context. But in the context of Roger Ailes, now dozens of women have said this is exactly what he does. And that the question that you asked, Grace, is a really good one. Why now? And I think a lot of people who haven't experienced it think like, well, why didn't they just say it at the time, right? And I think even Sarah Palin recently said like, why didn't they just quit, right? Well, I mean, if you haven't lived it, you don't know the kind of pressure. I mean, do you know, okay, so for in the context of news, the old way of doing things, and TV still does it the old way in a lot of ways, is you work your way up from these tiny little towns to a mid-sized market, and then to hopefully a large market, then to cable news. And if you crash at cable news, you're back in Milwaukee, or you're nowhere, right? So this is your entire career, everything you've ever worked for. And knowing what kind of pressure there is, that's why monsters like Roger Ailes go and think, I got you. So you're either going to play ball or you're going to lose your entire career. So of course they're afraid to come out. Because even if you, look, if she was the first one to say it, all the pressure in the world would have been on her. She certainly would have been fired from Fox News. It would have been hard to get a job elsewhere, etc. But even if you're the last person to come out, it taints you, even though it shouldn't. It should be the exact opposite. But I know, having worked in large corporations, I'm not just putting it on cable news, there's a thing of like, oh, is that a troublemaker? So there's 1,000 reasons why people don't come forward. And so when you see that dozens have against Roger Ailes, you realize even at this late date, it might be several dozen he did it to.
Yeah, and it's really good for her for corroborating the story of so many women and just speaking out and saying, I support these women, these allegations are true. This is something I experienced. I can't say, you know, for every single woman, but it really sounds like working her experience working at Fox News, it was sort of an occupational hazard. You might get hit on, you might be sexually harassed in the workplace. Brett, what was your reaction to this story?
Just how she specifically articulates the feeling that she had. She says, I knew I wasn't going to that hotel room under any circumstances. I didn't know what that meant for my career, though. I want everybody to understand that. I want everybody to understand. I know that this happens. There is a visceral reaction that you have where you recognize my career and everything I worked for is under threat, and I don't know what's going to happen next. It's that powerlessness. It's that thought of like, oh my gosh, I have a goal in mind. And I've been working so hard for it. And you know, there's all kinds of adversity that everybody faces. But to face this specific kind, this on the nose, like he just came out and said it. Like all those things that end up with him finally after saying like, you know, after work, not here, in a hotel. And then having to add, do you know what I mean? And then the thought crossing her mind that like, oh my goodness, this is that thing that everybody talks about that I have to be afraid of. And then add to that, she has gone on since then. She has made it. She has nothing to gain from saying this.
She works. She's on CNN all the time.
Yeah, and I think she does a good job in the interview of saying, I have plenty of friends from my time at Fox News. I'm not trying to throw anyone under the bus, but I do think it's important to speak out. And I absolutely echo that sentiment. I think that it is so important to speak out when you have experienced that sort of injustice. And she did it in a really eloquent way. And yeah, this is just sort of speaking truth to power, which I know is something we all find really important.
Yeah,
and that's how predators work, right? They find the people who are most vulnerable. And that's why a lot of the child molesters, and I'm not saying that this is the same thing here, will go find the most vulnerable kids, go help disadvantaged kids, because they'll know they got no one to turn to, they got no power at all, and it'll be easier to take advantage of them. So if you're an accountant, this stuff happens too, but it is a tiny bit easier to go take another accounting job or to set up your own practice, a tiny bit, right? In news, like I said, you fall off a cliff. You get off of cable news, you're done. Your career is totally done. So, and Roger Ailes knows it. So that's why he can say to them, either you sleep with me or you're done for. And it's a credible threat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we have more allegations against Fox News.
Back on the Young Turks, some tweets for you guys. Joy writes, "The stress on flights starts with TSA. By the time you get on board, you're already pissed off." And her name is Joy, so imagine what the rest of us feel like. Michael Schnell says, "Mock Schnell, no. I love being the last one on a plane." Ironically, he did not mock Schnell. He's the last one on a plane. "I walk down the aisle playing Duck Duck Goose."
Ha! That's great.
You're gonna get arrested and tackled for that, by the way, next time.
"And I hate being last on a plane, not because I care about that or embarrassed or anything like that. Almost certainly the flight attendant will say, we're going to have to check your bag in. But I didn't ask to be the last on the plane. You put me in zone 28. Mm-hmm. So why am I the one getting hosed on my onboard thing?"
Because Argentinian mothers are bringing too many strollers.
Lynn Gunn says, "Why don't they just quit?" Says Sarah Palin. "That is the only thing she knows how to do." Oh, damn, burn. Burn, I like it. Okay, now member shout outs of the day is David Lambert and Marcus Collins. And for all you members, we're going to analyze more of my dreams. We're going to talk about what Trump thinks of TV, and it's unbelievable how he operates. And what my 4-year-old daughter thinks, am I more black or am I more white? Okay, I did a definitive test. You shake your head in confusion, but it will be clarified for the members in the post game, tytnetwork.com/join. And you will say, oh, I get it, that is clear.
We'll see.
Okay, now finally, donors to the tytnetwork.com/go campaign. $270 from Charles in Germany. Wow, thank you.
Wow, Charles.
I guess you're in charge.
Oh, God, no.
Okay, Eric from Arizona gave $420.42.
Jeez.
I don't know if that's in honor of 420 that passed recently, but
I hope so.
Thank you, Eric. And $1,000 from DJ in California.
Wow.
Awesome. All right. What? Let's see that. God, Grace is like, what?
That is so cool.
Yes.
Not even Grace is that nice.
I know. So, I am not that
nice. By the way, tomorrow, 2-hour show extravaganza after the main show. One last hurrah for this fundraising drive. Okay, so you guys get more content tomorrow. Look at this, 1-714-656. 1750 gets you a new reporter, 2 gets you 2 reporters, and we have less than a week to go. If you're going to panic at all, this would be the time to do it. All right, what's next, Grace?
Okay, a new lawsuit alleges that Fox News employees who are black were forced to arm wrestle for entertainment. Now, Gabriel Sherman spoke with MSNBC, and this is what he had to say about it.
Joy, this is a systemic problem at Fox News that was created by Roger Ailes over more than 2 decades. And overnight, I reported on pending litigation that's going to be filed next week by 7 more African-American employees at Fox News who are claiming racial discrimination. And I obtained a letter from their attorneys that was sent to Fox that described really horrific acts of racial discrimination in which black employees were forced to arm wrestle for the entertainment of white employees in the accounting department. So these sorts of descriptions are really evident of a culture that is entrenched and that has not changed in the wake of Bill O'Reilly's departure.
So the legal nightmares continue for Fox News. What I found particularly troubling, and I want to get a reaction from you guys, is that the encounter that they're describing, you know, ostensibly there were other employees that were present. And when we talk about there is a gross culture here going on at Fox News, no one was going to speak up and say that this was wrong before this lawsuit comes out. I think that, to me, is when we talk about an unhealthy, toxic workplace culture, this is an example of it. Would you agree?
Yeah. And so I think what's surprising is how surprised we are. They say such vile things on air, but I don't know. I guess everything is fake these days. So you like, I thought maybe it's to some degree all a play to them or something. That can they really mean all that? And it turns out no, they do mean it. And so they invite vile people to work there, and they've created a vile culture. So the reason why I find it still surprising nonetheless is because, so for example, a couple years ago, we did a super fun arm wrestling contest here at the Young Turks, right? We all participated, but could you imagine if I came in and said, no, only JR and Ja'Cory will be wrestling. They're the two African Americans, I want to see them arm wrestle. Oh, first of all, they're not the only African Americans here, but that would be like, what? I like that's such a foreign concept to me. Like, are you insane? Who would do that? But it's seeped in at Fox News so much that it's even the accounting department is doing it.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? It's like, yeah, at the top you got all the sexual harassment, etc. But it's seeped in so much that the accounting department's like, well, of course, obviously.
All right, Brett, yeah. Let me get a reaction from you on this story.
Yeah, I'm obviously that kind of thing I would say. But it's similar to the other story we were talking about, where it's like, what do you do? Like, if you are the decent, level-headed person in that situation.
Working in the accounting department.
Yeah, you're an assistant on someone's desk. There is that the other annoying level of it to say, like, I am afraid that if I bring this up, then something bad will happen to me. And that's why we need to not have any of this stuff at workplaces, because the same with sexual harassment, the same with like whatever weird gladiator system they devised at Fox News, it seems. Wouldn't it be better if it wasn't that way? Wouldn't it be awesome if people could just kind of be at work and not have to worry about that stuff? And so often it's like the higher ups saying, I want to preserve this like cool, fun vibe here for me to tell these jokes and act this way. But it's like, give up your jokes because it's really negatively affecting other people's lives. I'd like to hear more details about this.
Right. I think
it just sounds so weird.
There was a term that that Allison in the previous story, Allison Camerota, said to CNN, where she's like, I'm glad that we're getting some daylight in on what the culture was here at Fox News. And ultimately, I think that's what it comes down to. We still need to wait to hear the facts. Right now, these are just allegations in a lawsuit. But if they come out to be true, then it is good that we are having some daylight shed on what's going on in the Fox News Corporation, because it's not okay and it needs to be called out.
If you gave me three options of what actually happened at Fox News, like I would not be able to, like if you had two fictional ones and this, I would not be able to pick out which one.
Oh, that's yeah, you would definitely think like this was the made up one.
Dog fighting and like there's people who, I don't know, have to run naked through the office to the bathroom. Like now all bets are off. When there's like a racist arm wrestling over the top movie happening, like that's a problem.
Yeah, it reminded me of Django Unchained. I mean, it is really, really gross if all this is true. But you would have guessed wrong on all of them. There was a lady who called a cancer survivor one boob girl. There was a same woman saying to African American workers there that every day they had to put their arms up and go hands up, don't shoot before they left. Oh, turns out if they're deeply racist on air, they might be deeply racist off air. Okay, we gotta go, but we'll have one more segment for you right away when we come back. All right, well, that happened.
It happens every time.
Happens a lot.
I always get someone like tweeting a weird gif at me dancing, and I'm fine with it. Just know that I don't think or know or believe that I'm a good dancer. I just like dancing because it makes me feel good. I just want to say that.
God bless. I hear you, sister.
Thank you.
All right, let me do more donors for a second. $127 from Price in Louisiana, $250 from Sue in Iowa, and $500 from Ferial in New York. Amazing. I'm amazed every time by it, as I am amazed by arm wrestling contests at Fox News. I was trying to think of one during the break that could be racial but not racist. All right?
Gotcha.
And it turns out there aren't any. Because I was like, okay, what if you had the Asians arm wrestle? No, it's still racist.
Still racist.
Right, it's racist, I think, probably for different reasons.
If you had the white people arm wrestle, that's racist.
Yeah.
It's like, why can't I arm wrestle? Why can't everyone arm wrestle?
Yeah.
Is arm wrestling a sexist thing to have happen? Not if I participate, because I'll lose to girls.
Well, we had a male and female brackets.
You'll lose to me.
I was watching billiards.
That's it. We're making them arm
wrestle. Yes. Okay. We can try. We can show it, but I probably would. I was watching billiards. Why are there men and women's brackets for billiards?
Fair point. I need answers.
Okay, that actually is a fair point.
Right?
Yes.
I don't know.
Okay. What's going to be much more fair and entertaining is the Pop Trigger arm wrestling, which we then have to confess was inspired by the racist arm wrestling at Fox News.
By the silver lining in every cloud.
Okay.
All right. Let's talk about Sarah Palin. So Sarah Palin has shared a photo to her Facebook page that has gotten, as of this broadcast, around 8,000 shares and 18,000 likes. Let's go to a photo of what she shared. That's not the photo.
That's definitely not it.
But there's certainly a story about that photo, for sure.
Nope.
Maybe we, do we have it?
There we go.
There we go.
All right, so obviously you can see it says want free college, earn it. And there is definitely a duality in those photos right there. So the photo on the top is the photo of demonstrators came from a 2013 protest at Cooper Union for the Advancement of Science and Arts, which had ended its 155-year tradition of free tuition in the New York City-based college. And the photo below is of James Blake Miller, who gained fame known as the Marlboro Man after that photo was published in 2004 by the Los Angeles Times following the second battle in Fallujah. So a lot of people are talking about this. Like I said, it's gotten quite a few shares, quite a few likes. Some people really agree with this meme of an argument. Now, I was talking with Brett about it before we came to the air. I really get frustrated when we see sort of straw man arguments like this. I don't think that it helps to conduct a conversation that is progressive or that helps anyone get anywhere. It's not productive. I want to get a reaction from you guys because honestly, I just saw this meme and it made me incredibly frustrated and irritated because that's not what the argument is. Did you guys have a different response?
Yeah, she's definitely. When you try to essentialize everything down to a meme, and that meme like takes advantage of a guy, you're not on anyone's side in that situation because you're taking advantage of like that soldier's situation and what he went through to say that this is what you got to do. And she's sitting there. I mean, especially if you consider like what she was doing at the time, like on her computer in her office, going, "That's funny, send." Like essentializing it down to that isn't the discussion. It isn't the argument. You can bring that up in a larger argument of, you know, getting free college and what. But you also need to bring up things like, why is college so expensive? Why do the prices keep going up? It's just when you tweet out something like this, you don't want to have a real conversation.
You don't. It reduces the entire conversation to this is right. You know, no one's gonna say that veterans should not have free education. And then this is wrong. It's totally taken out of context. And what I don't like is when you look at the numbers of people that are just sort of mindlessly sharing this behind a keyboard and not looking into the stories and the facts and the discussion that is going on when we talk about affordable education and why higher education should be something that everyone has access to.
Okay. It's also simpler than that on a couple of fronts. It's apples and oranges. So, we can celebrate the heroic actions of that particular guy in Fallujah and still want other people to also be able to get free college education so they could have equality of opportunity and live the American dream. Why should only soldiers be allowed to do that? What a weird, are we Sparta? Are we in some sort of soldier state where only soldiers are allowed to get free education? You have to risk your life or have your limbs blown off to get a free education? Why? That makes no sense at all. And then what if we applied this standard to everything else? Want tax cuts, rich people? Earn it.
Healthcare?
Earn it, okay? No. Let's do it to their donors. Let's do it to their constituents, okay? Oh, you want a tax cut on Wall Street? Well, I want to see your ass in Fallujah. If you don't go to Fallujah, sorry, Wall Street bankers, no tax cuts for you guys. What? Earn it. If I haven't seen your legs blown off, then you didn't earn your tax cuts, okay? You want to get rid of Obamacare? Earn it. You want to deregulate coal mining so that they have a more dangerous job? Earn it. It's apples and goddamn oranges. It makes no sense at all. But a bunch of knucklehead conservatives are like, oh yeah, that's right, man. Yeah, we shouldn't get the same rights as rich people. We should, our kids shouldn't have the same chance.
Yeah. What? It's also like, you want a free college? Be good at a sport. That's another way.
That's a way to earn it.
Another way to do it. Why are we doing that? Oh my God, now I can compare athletes get free education and warriors get free education. What weird mixed message are we sending? Like, yeah, act like warriors on the battlefield and future Golden State Warriors get free education. But what are we doing? Just have a conversation.
But the rest of you, no, sorry, no American dream for you guys. Yeah, you know, if you're not like Mitt Romney and Donald Trump and didn't get hundreds of millions of dollars handed to you by your daddy,
yeah,
sad day
and
for
it's
you.
Like you need to raise tuition in order to build a building. Prove it. Like, prove that you need to raise the cost of education in this country, as opposed to just saying, yeah, we can keep doing it. We can keep raising the price of education because kids need degrees in order to get jobs. But, so we're going to do it. That's not fair.
We get nowhere when memes like this get shared around that just invalidates and misrepresents an entire argument. And then, you know, people, if it seems ridiculous and you're sharing it and you're like, yeah, that's I'm going to share that because that makes sense to me. But wow, that's so crazy. People want just free college. They're just in the streets wanting free college. If you think about it, get a little skeptical, ask some questions, do some research. Let's have a discussion here. Let's get somewhere. Instead of just sharing these mindless memes, it's absolutely ridiculous, and it's really irresponsible on her part too. It's because that's not what anyone's arguing. Yeah, I know, of course, but God damn it, I believe in the best of people, Jack.
You kind of actually do.
You kind of burns my soul.
This is totally a little bit off topic, but I really think that Sarah Palin and I have dreams of us being best friends because you know, like how Sandra Bullock in The Blind Side like met this kid and she's like, oh my gosh, maybe not all black men are scary, and they became best friends. He was a huge football star. I could be that lesbian for Sarah Palin. Think about it. I love camping. I love wildlife. I love Jesus. Why are we not best friends? I could be that lesbian that like, I could be that lesbian that she's just like, well, maybe they aren't all that bad.
Be good at football.
I have had a dream about that. I'm going to my dreams.
Oh, okay. I don't know that I want any more details on that dream.
I have
a dream.
My
parents are wildly ashamed of that, by the way. My parents are like, stop talking about Sarah Palin. Okay, moving on. The Florida House of Representatives have passed a bill that would ratchet up the drug war, including a new opioid mandatory minimum. So the State House yesterday voted unanimously 118-0 for a bill that will ratchet up Florida's drug war, enact new mandatory minimum sentences for opioid users and dealers, and create new prohibitions against trafficking drugs, including fentanyl and synthetic marijuana. The bill, called HB 477, was proposed by GOP Representative Kathleen Peters and Charlie Stone as a way to supposedly deter drug dealers from trafficking or selling opioids. Now, let's break down this bill a little bit more. In short, the 167-page bill would label fentanyl, fentanyl mixtures, and other more powerful synthetic opiates as Schedule I drugs, except for pharmaceutical purposes, label anyone caught with 4 grams or more of fentanyl as a fentanyl trafficker, subject to a mandatory 3-year prison term, force people caught with 14 grams of fentanyl to serve 15 years in prison, and send people caught with 28 grams of fentanyl to jail for 25 years. Judges would have zero discretion to alter those sentencing. There are also similar mandatory sentencing brackets for synthetic cannabinoids, that's a word to say, and they also add codeine to the list of drugs. Now, we're really going to get into the discussion about mandatory minimums and what purpose that they serve, but just to remind everyone, this is a quote from Greg Newberg, the state policy director of Families Against Mandatory Minimums. He says, quote, we had a heroin mandatory minimum law for 18 years. Lawmakers promised us it would deter drug use, but now we're in the midst of the worst heroin crisis we've ever seen. And the answer to that is to pass another mandatory minimum. It brings up a good question. Guys, I want to hear from you. Why is it so popular, even though we know with concrete evidence that mandatory minimums do not deter drug users from getting clean? Why do we see these mandatory minimums still being passed?
Certain mandatory minimums in the prosecution process are a way to leverage those convicted of those crimes into treatment programs.
Okay.
That's the only thing. Other than that, they're pretty ridiculous. Like federal crimes, no. Nonviolent federal drug offenders, that's not a thing. That's, you know, that is 5% of those who commit, who are, you know, convicted. But these things, I get it. And then you have to look at why it was unanimous. And everyone who votes for this is an easy vote by and large to say I'm tough on crime. The Senate, there's two bills. There's one in the House and there's one in the Senate. The Senate one has something that's pretty standard in state mandatory minimums, which is a safety valve for the judge to make a decision to say, I'm going to undo that. So anything where, and California has it where the, you know, the, there's three levels of potential sentences, a high, medium, and minimum, and then the judge kind of decides. And they give safety valves, but usually it seems like it's successful if they're like, do you want to go to jail for 5 years or do you want to go to a treatment program? And then they plea into the treatment program, and having some kind of minimum as a way to do that as opposed to 30 days in jail and they're back on the street going and doing that. That said, that's for heroin, carfentanil, fentanyl, crazy ass drugs. Like those are 10,000 times stronger than morphine. But synthetic marijuana, like that's, yeah, wait, why is that in this bill?
Wait, is that edibles? What is that?
I think that's an attempt from, and I don't know. I don't know as much as I should about synthetic marijuana, but it seems like it's an attempt from the pharmaceutical industry to say this is where you get your marijuana from. And similar to the way that people in like the 90s or the early 2000s were prescribed a bunch of drugs, and then that was the process where people got hooked, and then it got regulated as a way to tamp that down, and then a black market exploded. It seems like this is an attempt for the pharmaceutical industries to get into that first part of it. So if you, but I, it, weed is completely different. The frustrating thing about this is like synthetic marijuana seems to be a way to kind of get the pharmaceutical money.
Yeah, so I'll break it down a little bit further. So first of all, if fentanyl wasn't a Schedule I drug already, marijuana is a Schedule I drug. So that's already weird and insane because fentanyl is disastrous, right?
It's used,
the worst of the worst.
Yeah, it's used for surgery to for insane amounts of pain. It's just, yeah, this is, it's a Schedule I drug that should be a Schedule I drug. It's not in the same camp as marijuana.
So, but okay, so if you were being fair, marijuana would be nowhere near Schedule I and fentanyl would. On the other hand, I don't think any of it should be illegal, even fentanyl. Because look, first of all, you don't like, don't take fentanyl.
Right.
I mean, if it's 10,000 times worse than morphine, are you insane? Don't take it. And if you do, you don't have much time left. I'm not kidding. I mean, it is quite often very, very deadly. So you're in already disastrous shape. But do we think we're going to stop it by imprisoning the people selling it, let alone the people that's possessing it? If they're possessing it, they got more problems than your prison sentence. They got a fentanyl problem, right?
Yeah.
And so, and the people selling, it's never the supply, it's always the demand. So we're never going to learn this stupid lesson. And then you add on top of it the zero discretion, right? But that's the whole point of a judge, is for him to exercise judgment. Does the guy, was he selling boatloads of fentanyl and people weren't going to take it, but somehow he made them take it? Or the guy had an edible over there? And again, I don't know that it applies to edibles, right? Whatever the hell synthetic marijuana is, right? So, well, no, I want the judge to have discretion there, right?
Yeah.
What do you mean zero discretion?
Yeah, and something else that they bring up is that there is a major problem with counterfeit pills right now. So someone could be thinking that they're buying Oxy. Of course, none of this is something that we would recommend, but someone could think that they're buying Oxy. In fact, they bought some fentanyl, they get caught with that, and they're behind bars. You know, I mean, that's what we're talking about here. This is an insane ratcheting up of the war on drugs.
It's so difficult. The whole process is so difficult because it's the intersection of, especially in Florida. Florida is like where a lot of the fentanyl arrives.
Yeah.
And they have, when you'll see it explode first there. They are the first, they and Chicago were the first two to have like elephant tranquilizer, carfentanil. We talked about it on this show, like show up. It is such a difficult situation. And then what scares the hell out of legislators who are trying to set like the agenda and leave enough wiggle room by and large to let like the judges say what the sentencing is, it's just those legislators, if they're gonna say we're gonna decriminalize heroin, like you need a lot to back that up. And if that fails, then you're out of a job. And I don't know. It's such a big leap. It's such a big. I get the marijuana thing. We're doing that. We're making it legal in California, Colorado, you know, Washington. But to say you're going to do that to like these opiates is really difficult. But it just might be what's necessary in order to treat it like a mental.
Well, I was going to say, I think that we need to at least see some sort of a shift in how we talk about drug addiction. You know, instead of talking about it as like these criminals that we just want them locked away, they're not safe to be around, they're not safe to be on the streets, let's put them away. I think we do need to lean in a little bit more and have a conversation about what is drug addiction and how, you know, how can we treat these people and not just like how can we lock them up and get them off the streets.
Yeah, I just don't think the mandatory minimum discussion is far enough along, or I don't think that mandatory minimums mean something to enough people right now.
I agree.
Mandatory minimums sound like an answer that representatives give to their constituents when they're saying, there's so much heroin, what are we gonna do about it? All these junkies are in my yard. Like those calls you get from your constituents. And the representatives just say, stronger laws.
It's also a different conversation when we're talking about opiates than when we're talking about weed. So I think we can all agree that when we're talking about marijuana use, that as you know, as it's listed as a Schedule I drug, okay, those mandatory minimums don't jive. But we know that opiates are a serious drug, and there are serious ramifications. And so we want some sort of treatment for it. We want something to happen. There should be a consequence if you are trafficking heroin or fentanyl. But what I think we agree on is that the mandatory minimums, as they are right now, is not that. It's not treating it effectively.
So, yeah, no, I don't agree to anything. I think this is all mental. So we allow the pharmaceutical companies sell OxyContin, by the barrels, and that gets people hooked in the first place. That leads to heroin, at least to fentanyl. But that's all perfectly legal. Well, as long as it's a good racket and you're making money off of it, right? So you can get hooked on alcohol and nobody's going to put you in prison. You can get hooked on OxyContin and nobody's going to put you in prison. But if you get hooked on things that they are not making a profit off of, then you're going to prison. Prison? Why? That doesn't make any sense. Could you imagine if we locked up all the alcoholics? No, I mean, it's preposterous, right? No, they need help. They need treatment. Not like, we'll show you. Why don't you get a mandatory minimum? See how you like beer then. They're alcoholic, it's not gonna make a difference. So this is all about who's making money and who's not making money. Criminalizing it doesn't work, it's never worked. It leads to gangs, it leads to violence, and prohibition leads to more use rather than less use. And now countries that have decriminalized marijuana and other drugs have shown that when you decriminalize, you get less usage. Less addiction, let alone the money you're saving, let alone this prison industrial complex that we've created here in America for no reason, where we lock up huge percentages of our population. No, I say no to all of it. No, this is exactly the wrong direction. By the way, don't take fentanyl. It's a terrible idea. And there, I just helped a lot more than any of these stupid laws will. Okay.
All right, you want to do enough?
All right, we're done.
I think, yeah.
Okay.
We did it.
Like I said in the post game, the disaster that is Trump and his TV viewing habits, it's so.
I hope we watch the same shows.
Well, what do you think of Steve Doocy? and like I told you, fun little thing about how my daughter decided whether I'm more black or more white. I guess I was a little surprised, but not too surprised. All right, anyways, you'll find out in a minute, because if you're members, tytnetwork.com/join. Bye-bye.